DeSanto Propane is four generations strong as a trustworthy, family-owned business with unmatched customer service. Go online at DeSantoPropane.com for more info or call toll-free at 1-800-752-4574 today. Since 1937, the difference has been DeSanto Propane.
Do you want to know what's happening in the Finger Lakes? We do too. We're going in depth with decision makers in the heart of upstate New York to get the answers you need. From the team of FingerLakes1.com, this is Inside the FLX.
Today on Inside the FLX, we are talking about rural healthcare. According to the National Institute for Healthcare Management, 12.6 of the 19.6 million people who live in New York are considered medically underserved, which means there aren't enough primary care providers, high poverty rates, and a high elderly population in most communities. And if you live in the Finger Lakes, you probably know the primary care doctors in your community by name and can count them on one hand. Moreover, if a trip to the hospital is necessary, it's probably a 25 to 30 minute drive away. Enter this new pilot program between URMC and Five Star Bank aimed at addressing the access issues associated with rural healthcare. The program's creators asked a simple question. What if there were common access points that took the stress out of connecting with a doctor? What if it could be as easy as, say, going to the bank? Something people in rural communities often do several times a month. Last week, I was joined by Five Star CEO Marty Birmingham and URMC's Chief Digital Health Officer Michael Hasselberg to discuss. Our conversation kicked off with a closer look at how the partnership began between these two entities.
You know, so I had the opportunity to do a presentation to our medical center board around the future of healthcare and digital transformation and how we could leverage technology to reach more communities in the upstate New York area. And, you know, I was talking about the need for convenient locations within these communities that, you know, we could set up access points, sites. And Marty had heard my presentation and immediately after the presentation came up to talk with me, and I'll let Marty jump in to give his viewpoint.
I did, you know, kind of a quintessential community connection.
Yeah.
Everyone local around the table trying to do what's right, best interest of the community. In this case, the topic was healthcare, University of Rochester Medical Center board meeting. And after Michael gave a very comprehensive, fact-based presentation about the aims of this particular program, I walked up before I left and said, I think we may be able to help because we have 49 branches and 35 of them are in relatively rural locations. And, you know, Michael considered that and actually, I think, went back and saw where the intersection of your zip codes and what you were targeting versus where our locations were. And there was a lot of overlap and the conversation took off in earnest.
Yeah. I'm curious from the bank's perspective, I would assume that maybe there were some reservations about introducing healthcare into facilities that, you know, typically financial institutions.
I think there were inside our company, but, you know, as a CEO, part of my job is to be the leader and evangelist and, you know, work with our teams. And this is an incredible opportunity for the bank to extend, you know, its mission. We get up every day as Five Star Bankers to support the financial well-being of the communities we serve. And in this case, we're going to support the well-being of the communities we serve from a healthcare perspective. We had plenty of space. Banking is evolving. It's evolving fast. And the three branches where we are doing the trial all are very large buildings. The banking industry, our company would not build them as big as that today. So we really had a lot of flexibility from a physical space perspective to accommodate what would you would need to stand up for this program.
Sure. Michael, so let's talk sort of the 411 of how it works, what we're talking about in terms of technology and what the rollout has been like for you guys. What is this? What are we talking about here?
Well, you know, it actually required a lot of partnerships. I mean, Five Star being our key partner in this, but we had a partner with a few technology partners to help make this happen. You know, the first partner that we worked with was a partner that we had already been working with at the university for quite some time, which is a company called DexCare. And DexCare is essentially our video conferencing platform that we use for telemedicine visits. So we have been doing telemedicine for a long time with DexCare, where it's, you know, University of Rochester primary care providers and urgent care providers that provide this on-demand service into patients' homes. But what we had learned from that experience was in our rural communities, there were a few barriers to doing video visits with our team. And, you know, one of those barriers was broadband access. Although a lot of the communities do have a good broadband infrastructure, the other problem we ran into was poverty, that folks couldn't afford broadband internet in their homes. And so the only internet access that they had available to them were their data plans on their cell phones. And when you do video to a data plan, it's very data intensive. So to expand our partnership with DexCare, we actually then spoke with Verizon, who was the largest telecommunication provider in our region. And we said, Verizon, is there something you could do to help us with this? And Verizon said, you know, we absolutely can. You know, first thing is, you know, we can help get 5G connectivity out to these communities to help support this. And Verizon then also introduced us to the third partner, which is a company called Higi Health. And Higi is a kiosk vendor. And so if you go into, you know, retailers today or pharmacies today, and you go into the pharmacy section, you will probably see a Higi Health station where you can sit down, get your weight, get your blood pressure taken at these stations. But up to this point, those stations weren't able to do telemedicine at those stations. So it was just get your vital signs done, get some education from the station. But unable to connect our providers to it. And so coming together with Verizon and Higi and DexCare, we were able to bring the connectivity needed to, into those stations, bring the on-demand telemedicine platform into those stations, and then finding these really convenient, trusted sites in the community and five-star banks to put these stations out into.
I'm sure it was a lengthy portion of the process, identifying which locations were going to be the right ones. Real estate on site, so the space you actually had to play with inside the banks, was that perhaps one of the bigger criteria that ultimately went into this decision?
Well, yes, from our perspective, we have surplus space in these physical, you know, locations. So the question was, how can we set it up in a way that, you know, doesn't break the bank, doesn't require a lot of capital investment on our part, and fulfills, you know, privacy, HIPAA, and other concerns that a patient would want to make sure is all, you know, done satisfactorily. So, and I don't think that was too hard.
And absolutely. I mean, you guys were wonderful, you know, gave some very nice private space. You know, we brought in our infection prevention experts at the university to really think through in partnership with the bank staff of what would be kind of the flow of customers at Five Star who may benefit from this service line into those private secured areas in the bank without, you know, promoting infection spread from healthy individuals into the bank. And, you know, I think we got to a place where, you know, we have some really nice private locations that are conveniently accessible in these communities that have been hard to reach from a telemedicine primary care standpoint.
That was one of the most common pieces of feedback after we ran the story about the announcement itself, was the concern that I think some people had this idea that you'd walk into a bank and just see a telemedicine station in the middle of the lobby. It's simply not the case, right? Like these are well placed and sort of tucked away. So there is privacy for everybody involved.
There is. I was in the Ovid office today. It is a former, you know, conventional office. So there's a door, the windows are all, you know, privacied up and very discreet, very accessible.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So let's get into how to use or how it's going to be used. From URMC's standpoint, what is the use case for this? Who is using it? Why might they be using it?
Yeah. So right now there are two primary use cases for these stations. One, you know, let's say you have an urgent care need. I have a, you know, flu-like symptoms, cold-like symptoms, and, you know, I want to see somebody now to get my treatment. And, you know, the closest maybe urgent care center or primary care center may be 10 or more miles away. Yeah. You can drive up to the five-star bank that is probably within, you know, 3 miles of where you live. You could go into one of these private rooms within the bank, and you can sit down at one of these virtual care stations. It's as simple as hitting a few buttons on the screen and entering in some of your demographic information. You will be directly connected to a University of Rochester primary care provider. And I want to emphasize that this is not some, you know, national telemedicine network where you're being connected to somebody in California. Right. Like, this is somebody that's here in this community and knows this community to treat you. The other thing that folks can take advantage of these stations is, you know, a lot of our chronic diseases, you know, like let's say diabetes and hypertension, you know, oftentimes your primary care doctor will encourage folks, hey, I need you to get regular blood pressures. And so you can bring those blood pressures back to me at your next appointment. But not everybody has a Bluetooth blood pressure cuff in their home. Sure. You can go up to these stations with no cost at all. Sit down, get your blood pressure, your weight, your vital signs, and you can have an app that you can download to track that information so you can bring it back to your doctor. And you don't have to be a University of Rochester patient to take advantage of either of these services. Where we hope to go in the future with these stations is the ability that we can schedule appointments onto these stations. Okay. So we can schedule primary care appointments, but we're also hoping to be able to schedule specialty appointments onto these stations. So again, trying to really increase that convenient access.
Yeah, absolutely. Emergencies. If there ever were an emergency, so somebody misreads the situation, obviously, folks in the public aren't doctors, aren't medical professionals, misreads the situation, goes there, perhaps a little more urgent than something that can be negotiated in that situation. How is that handled? I'm assuming since they're talking with a medical professional right there, they're instructed to what their next move should be, but elaborate on what.
Yeah, 100%. You know, we will triage up as needed. So in some cases, you really need to go to the urgent care in person to get care. And, you know, our clinicians virtually will tell you where the closest urgent care clinics are, and encourage you to go there. You know, if it's a real acute emergency situation, you know, we will also, you know, make referrals to the emergency department in those cases. And the really great thing is that all of that first interaction that the patient has with our virtual provider is going to get documented. So by the time you arrive at that urgent care or emergency department, the process has already started, and it's essentially doing that warm handoff. So I think that's the one thing that, again, is really great about this program is it's, again, connected into the other community resources, the other maybe higher level of care options that are needed versus if you went online and you used, just a national telemedicine program, they're not connected to our community resources.
Yeah. Let's talk implications a little bit. Obviously, if all goes well with this pilot program, I would imagine there will be some hope of expanding it out. What is the impact longer term of being able to incorporate more telemedicine into the healthcare access issues that we see across the Finger Lakes, especially in these really rural communities where, you know, you mentioned a 10-mile drive, you know, it could be a 25 or 30-minute drive to the nearest urgent care center or hospital.
A major strategic priority for the University of Rochester, you know, it's part of our mission to get high quality care that's accessible out into all of the communities we serve. And we know that there are significant gaps, you know, that we do not have specialty services. We don't have primary care services out into some of these communities. And we are trying to figure out ways to get those services accessible. And technology and telemedicine is one of those potential ways to do it. And so, you know, we're continually expanding our on-demand telemedicine services into patients' homes. You know, we're trying to expand them out so they're going to be 24/7 in terms of the time and days that they're offered. We're already planning of and working on expanding them out into pediatrics and behavioral health. And again, even starting to think about other specialty services. You know, these virtual care stations that we're piloting with Five Star, again, this is just another convenient access point. If you are unable to do telemedicine into your home, you don't have the internet or broadband capability, you can go to one of these convenient locations. And like I said, right now, you know, it's urgent care type issues that are available, but, you know, our plan and our goal is to offered scheduled telemedicine services for primary care and specialty services into these convenient locations. So again, increasing access and leveraging technology is part of our mission at the U of R and is part of our strategic priority.
I want to emphasize what he just said in terms of the strategic priority. As a community volunteer serving on the board, obviously I bring the perspective of the communities we serve as a banker, community banker, et cetera. But the University Medical Center has been executing against a long-term strategy to regionalize really the delivery of their world-class clinical services in the greater Rochester Finger Lakes region. So if you think about Strong Memorial Hospital is well-known, Highland Hospital is well-known, but they, this management team has gone out of their way to make co-investments, to make affiliations, to connect regional healthcare in Wellsville, over to Hornell, over to Dansville, up to Geneva, and over to Canandaigua. So there's a huge, extension of that world-class service that exists today. But these last miles was just the next, extension of the strategy that could be implemented. And we were very excited to do this with Michael and his team because, you know, pre-COVID, post-COVID, seems like that's the way we talk about life these days. The adoption of new technologies and, you know, highly personalized digital experiences is quite high against all demographics. And so this is a wonderful way to close the gap in the delivery of the services, but as well the delivery of services to an economically vulnerable population that, you know, deserves this type of access to quality healthcare.
Do you hope to some degree that Five Star can serve as a bit of a example of non-healthcare settings that could potentially be future sites of partnerships like this?
Yes. And that's why I am walked up to Michael at the end of that one meeting. And that's why I embraced the opportunity. That's why I'm here today. It's an exciting chance to experiment and to experiment with a partner and partners that are so committed to this particular opportunity. It may not all go perfectly, but we're going to learn along the way.
Sure.
And we will adjust and adapt.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to jump on that, you know, financial wellness and physical wellness are intrinsically connected. And, you know, the ability that we can maybe address both at the same time. So, you know, we can create access points to create more physical wellness promotion in these communities. But, you know, if patients come in and, you know, they have financial insecurities, which we screen for in healthcare, you know, we can refer those patients to the financial advisors within the bank that can also help support the financial wellness. So we see this as, you know, winning on two fronts of keeping our communities health well. We also know that this is really outside of the box. People don't connect healthcare with banks, yeah. but we actually think it may be a match made in heaven. And, you know, since we've kind of launched this, we've had other health systems and banks throughout the entire country reach out to us and applaud us and ask us, how can we do something similar? So this is really exciting. I think this is the first time ever in our country that healthcare has been delivered into a bank. And,
You know, equitable and inclusive and safe banking products and services is a fundamental reason for being for the banking industry. We are highly regulated. Healthcare is highly regulated. So, you know, the integrity of the services that are going to be delivered, the education, the advice that's going to be occurring in the physical space that we're working together in should be, you know, up to the standards that our patients would expect, regulators would expect. So it is a really unique opportunity. And I'm very hopeful that other banks, as Michael's talking about, are going to consider it.
Is this also just an operationally speaking, an easier way to deliver services in rural communities, given the fact that we have heard a lot about primary care shortages in terms of doctors in rural communities, especially for URMC? Was this sort of also, you know, just an easier way to do business in some of these really rural communities right now?
You know, I think it was a good path forward for us to get started. You know, we're going to continue as a health system to invest into these communities, and we're going to continue. And if we can, you know, recruit and hire providers to be in these communities. Sure. But while we're doing that, you know, there is a workforce shortage across the country in healthcare right now, and especially in areas like primary care, for example. And while we're trying to work on that workforce, we want to leverage our current workforce and expand their reach and capacity as far as we can. And, you know, we see, again, telemedicine and this partnership is the first step of doing that. But, you know, we are going to continue to invest in trying to bolster up our workforce and figure out ways to get more services that both in person and virtually out into these communities.
Yeah.
But if you think about our Ovid location, mm-hmm. 25 miles to Ithaca, which is the next largest city, 50 miles, probably an hour at least in the car to get to downtown Rochester or onto the medical center campus. And if, you know, you can access this through the app, through these machines, rather than having to call or, you know, try to schedule an appointment and one of those, a physical location, you're picking up time. You're picking up important time in your life, let alone dealing with a health issue. And, you know, it should be a part of the continuum of how we all experience healthcare, I think, regardless of, you know, age, economic status, et cetera.
Yeah. Poverty and transportation are two of the number one issue or two of the biggest issues that we hear about every day in rural communities like Seneca, Steuben, and many others. Healthcare literacy rates, they're lower in rural communities, obviously. But how can this be a tool to help educate the community and sort of break down some of the barriers that might exist for people who maybe avoid healthcare in their own life in some of these communities?
You know, that has been a difficult nut to crack, to be honest with you. You know, we have a lot of faculty at the university that are passionate about health literacy, public health, getting education out into these communities, and we're working really hard to do that. You know, I just met with some of our public health researchers who, like, this is their area of expertise, and looking to expand this clinical partnership of how they can get involved to kind of leverage these health stations to increase health literacy in these communities, but also, you know, introduce even other opportunities that these communities may not be aware of, including some of the world-renowned clinical research that we do at the university that, you know, folks in suburban areas and in our urban areas may be more aware of these research opportunities that they can get involved with, but even getting that out into the rural communities and saying, hey, you've got a world-class academic health system in your backyard who is doing cutting-edge research, and, you know, if you're interested in getting involved, there are opportunities. And so, you know, we're having those discussions, you know, with our experts in public health, with our experts in diversity, equity, inclusion to figure out, you know, how do we continue to address health literacy in rural communities, but how else do we increase access to some of the wonderful opportunities that an academic health system can provide.
Absolutely. Higher rates of chronic diseases too, typically in more rural communities, rural settings. When you guys were factoring that into the equation, how did that sort of frame how you guys were going to approach executing on this? Because you probably have an idea of some of the things that you'll likely see come into these settings.
100%. And it's actually why we were really excited to work with Higi Health. Instead of just standing up, let's say, an iPad or a tablet on a stick in you know, one of these rooms in the banks, you know, we wanted a great partner that already has experience in chronic disease education and prevention, and Higi has that. So again, you know, a lot of those chronic diseases, diabetes, obesity, hypertension, congestive heart failure, you know, to manage those chronic diseases over time, you know, we need to consistently get routine blood pressures, weights, vital signs, and then provide education at the right moments of time of things you can do to address that. What's great about these Higi stations, again, outside of the telemedicine component, anybody can use these stations. You can sit down on these stations. You can get your vital signs as frequently as you want. And built into those stations are evidence-based care pathways that the American Heart Association has integrated in, that, you know, your blood pressure's high. You can participate in a care pathway about how you can work on your nutrition, how you can increase your exercise. And so that was key for us when we were thinking about the communities we wanted to serve, to make sure we had the right technology, the right evidence-based care pathways built into that technology that could go even beyond the telemedicine component. So 100%, those were some of the things that we were thinking about. And again, why we made the decision we wanted to work with Higi instead of just putting an iPad on a stick in one of these sites.
So, as we move forward, how long now has the pilot actually been running?
So, well, it took us about a year to build the new station. Because again, these stations weren't able to do the telemedicine component. It took us, within that year to operationalize this, do the renovations to the bank sites. We've only been live for a few months now with these stations turned on. To be fully transparent and frank, we have not had a telemedicine visit yet. We have not had somebody come in to do telemedicine with one of our providers. That being said, you know, we've had a lot of folks that have come in to use those stations for chronic disease tracking and prevention. So we are seeing that use. We think we will get there and, we will have somebody go do a telemedicine appointment. Hey, I would even encourage you on the way home, or if you're feeling ill, you know, stop it and try it out. But again, I think it's larger behavior change, like making that connection that I can go to a bank to get a healthcare appointment. That takes a significant behavior change, and that takes time. And we're okay with that. At the university, and I know Marty at the bank, you know, we understand that this may take 6 months, you know, even a year before folks actually start making that connection. I can go to the bank to get a telemedicine appointment done.
With that in mind, how do you approach measuring success? Because I think from the outside, a lot of folks would think of it as, well, it must have some metric in mind in terms of how many visits they want by a certain time or something to that effect. But that doesn't sound like that's the way you're approaching it at all.
It's not, actually. And I've gotten this question a lot. How much volume do you need to get to break even on this? And we're not even thinking about it that way. We are not at all looking at this as being a revenue generating service or even a service that breaks even. Like, this was truly mission driven. This was truly based off of, it's part of who we are at the University of Rochester to deliver high quality care and out into our communities. And for us, the metrics of winning is just feasibility. Do patients use these? Do patients enjoy them? Do they find it convenient? Do the bank staff support this? Do they feel like this is a value add to their services? To us, that's the win for us. And if we see that, you know, we'll continue to expand it, invest in it from the university side. I'll let Marty jump in on that.
I would just say, again, witnessing this conversation, starting with Michael and this process, the university walks the talk of a long-term strategic initiative and executing against it. And at the bank, we try to do the same. We're a publicly traded company. We have all the pressures of, you know, short-term pressures of people asking and questioning, whatever. But, you know, the keystone is the eye on the horizon. And, you know, we have plenty of patients to partner with the university on this topic, particularly because we're all about financial literacy ourselves, too. And when you're dealing with the economically vulnerable population, there's a lot to do to support their well-being. And it's just a natural tie-in. And we should be in this for the long haul.
Yeah. And before we go, I want to ask, because this is undoubtedly one of a dozen questions I'm going to get after we wrap here. A senior is going to send me an email and they're going to say, I'm not comfortable with this technology, but I'm a little curious. How do you guys approach getting those folks more comfortable with the technology element, but also comfortable enough so that they engage with it and use it, given the fact that, you know, communities across the Finger Lakes, especially rural ones, are becoming older, and that's becoming a broader chunk of the population in these communities?
Yeah, so we've put a lot of community outreach investment into this project. We're having folks go out to these communities to do demo days and to do education and to try to encourage folks to give it a try. You know, that being said, you know, in general, you know, I think in some ways it's a myth when we say that the older adult population doesn't feel comfortable with technology or telemedicine. Actually, some of our most successful telemedicine service lines at the university are geriatric centric. And when you think about, let's say the baby boomer generation, that's a very actually tech-savvy generation. Throughout their lifetime, you know, they went through the introduction of computers, the internet boom, cellular technology, all happened during the baby boomer generation. And that is the generation that is aging into our older adults. And so, you know, I am actually more bullish that it's, you know, our older adults are actually more tech-savvy than folks give them credit for.
I'm very bullish. We upgraded our digital platform in the middle of the pandemic. Recall, everybody had to shut their businesses down, et cetera. So that was a delivery channel that we needed to renovate fast. And the adoption was baby boomers and younger, but as well, those that were older were willing and did adopt. This morning, when I drove out to Ovid, I filled up with some gas right next door to our branch. Went inside to use the bathroom, and the McDonald's is all screens where folks older than me were ordering their meals. After Ovid, I stopped in our Seneca Falls, Waterloo branch, and went to the McDonald's there to get a cup of coffee. Same thing. And so I'm very optimistic about the resilient. We're a resilient society. Resilient country, resilient people. So I think folks are willing and open to change and learning new things.
Yeah. One more time, where can folks learn more about this? Where's the best place to go on the URMC website if you want to learn more about this program?
Yeah, you go to Get Care Now, which is, it'll tell you about this program, but will also tell you about all of the different technology and urgent primary care services that we have available.
Awesome. Marty, Michael, thank you both for coming in today. We appreciate it.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you for having us.